Go.
Of course, I knew Carolyn, but I remember the people who would come in regularly and absolutely rely on it for all sorts of things, for not just the library and the connection to information, but almost like the place that they could come so they knew it was their safe place. It was the place where they weren't going to be told they were crazy. and that was really, really valuable. That was really valuable.
And how long did you work there? Was that a year before you got married to Mike, or
a year, and it was after.
After you got married.
After.
And you guys got married in 1989?
That's right. And we moved up, we moved out in 91, and I was commuting.
Right.
Already, back and forth when I was down there. So...
Oh, you were there in 91 at Count. You were commuting to the building.
I think it was around 90, 91.
Yeah. And do you remember this? It might have been the first time Carolyn was on Across the Country TV, and you had just started there, and then the call started flooding in. And you said to me,
absolutely,
my God, this girl's popular. You remember that?
Absolutely, I remember. Yeah.
That was shocking.
That was great. That was what's her name? The
Nene Petty.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Who then led? Who then? I'm not sure because she was on several times, but it could have been the one where the sugar people came in and caused a big scene and eventually led to her taking her license away. Might have been on the show, one of those Nene Petty shows that you experienced.
I don't remember that one. I remember one where I think. Possibly Carolyn DeMarco was in from out of town.
Yeah.
And joined. I think that's the one I remember.
Right. She was on it with her, is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And DeMarco had an office below you, I think. She was in the building.
Mm-hmm.
She eventually was. I don't know if you knew that.
Second floor, yeah.
So Mike told me a year or two ago that you got a new gig in Owen Sound and you really like it.
I do.
What is it?
So what I'm doing is I'm actually working for the county, so I'm it's municipal work, and I am working with food producers, so I am working to support and promote local food, and by support I mean work with the business owners to access funds, to develop skills, to find markets, things like that. So my official title is Economic Development Officer for Local Food. And that's
a government job?
It is, and it's an actual, real, full-time, 9-to-5 job, first one I've had. And I get to work with all sorts of farms and food producers of all kinds, from apple growers to restaurants to the latest thing that I did happened in the last week is I published a map that features 17 beer, wine, and cider producers, a little marketing piece, little pocket map that people can pick up.
For 17 companies, did you say?
17 different businesses are promoted through this map. So it's not all marketing. There's I'm working quite closely with the college, Georgian College. We do projects together, whether it's kind of networking and education events or working to develop curriculum that would help food producers. But it's all in aid of keeping our small farms and small food producers viable, which ultimately keeps this area viable as a rural area where you don't have mega farms of 17,000 acres.
Did you know Jim Patterson's brother has a beer company?
I most certainly do. I see him every year
at the festival or whatever. Do you see Jim or his brother?
I see his brother.
Right.
Yeah. So I see both of them actually.
Yes. Did you know that Jim Design is Carolyn's webmaster?
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, he does great stuff.
But we see each other at the festival, and they've got land up here, up the Bruce Peninsula to visit. So that's their connection. That's why they feel
right.
We want to keep those connections. Excuse me, through the festival.
So
what's up? So that's all past. So you're interviewing me, but I want to know what's up with you.
Oh, you wouldn't believe it. You don't know what me and Carol are doing at all, do you?
No.
Well, think of the most fantastic things that one could do as an individual in medicine and in energy devices, and that's what we're doing. We're actually a breakthrough operation for the whole world.
Okay, well, you're always on the cutting edge, so what is this thing?
Well, you would go to, on the medicine level, it's actually food. You'd go and try the RNA drops. RNA sounds like ribonucleic acid, but it stands for relaxing allow, but it affects the RNA, which affects chromosome 14, and then changes the DNA, so you grow 144,000 double helix strands instead of having only one or two. Now, isn't that the most absurd thing? That's right. That's the most absurd sentence you've ever heard for a long time, right?
Okay, you grow, grow DNA.
Yeah,
okay.
Double helix strands, right.
Yeah.
We add 143,999, I guess it's 143,999 strands to the one you have. You have a perfect cell. And we're doing this for 5 years, 4 years, and we have incredible testimonials. And we make $10,000 a day without doing anything.
Well, that's pretty insane. But I wouldn't say no.
That's pretty insane.
Okay, so what is so? Tell me what. Okay, the drops. What are the drops?
A non-physical source. You remember the evergreens? Well, we got something even better called ION. It's actually the environment of heaven, where people die when they go to heaven. They die and they go to heaven, supposedly, or they have that option. That environment that was heaven has come forth to speak. Sun Ra predicted it in 1980. Sun Ra, who me and Carol went to him for 5 days in 1970, July 70, for our honeymoon. And then 8 years later, after we see him at the Horseshoe Tavern, Carol does acupuncture on he and the band, he then makes a movie in Baltimore saying a voice will come from another dimension and will speak to humanity, and you guys better get ready for it. Well, that voice came to Bob and Carolyn. So that's another crazy statement I don't expect you to understand immediately. But that voice...
No, I just want to know more.
Yeah, so that voice gave us this substance that comes from barley. You just grow barley slightly different, not even growing. You just change the way you put it in the fridge. And it makes this incredible substance that has an interdimensional cell called the eye cell that causes this stuff. Now, anybody here? Hey, Bert, what's the RNA drops done for you, Bert?
It's corrected all of my old injuries, my joint injuries from playing football. Corrected all of them.
Okay, what is this? How is this?
I just want to...
Who's on the line?
Go ahead.
Well, this is Madeline. Who are... You're Mike Dyer's wife?
You're talking to Philly.
Philly, right.
Partner, right.
I just have to say I absolutely love... I mean, clearly you're very familiar with Bob because he just said those sentences to you and you just said, okay, tell me more.
Of course, I know Bob well enough to go, okay, I just want to know. Yeah.
Now, Bert is in Switzerland. Madeline's in San Francisco. We got people all over the world on the phone here right now. Hey, I'm breaking all CKLN records. I do an 18-hour radio show every Saturday night.
Oh, my goodness.
With no station breaks, no ID.
What are you, Fidel Castro?
Yeah, it's exact. I've talked about being Fidel Castro. Very good. Yeah.
That's very funny. That's amazing.
Yeah, so who else we got here? Actually, it's rather early. There's only, let's see if Linda wants to say something.
Okay, so I want to know about the barley. So you're sprouting it?
Well, we don't do it. We have people do it in a factory on the mainland.
Obviously.
And they just grow the barley, and so they started this in the fall of 2010. So the original clump of mashed barley is still being used. We're up into the 110th generation or something. So the substance, our product, gets stronger every generation. It's off the chart.
So it's not whole barley grains, so it's not enzymatic action from sprouting. You're dealing with something mashed, so you're...
Yeah, it's a simple
fermentation action or something.
It's not even that, right, Bert? How would you describe Bert? What do you know? It's just simple growing, and we mash it up, and it
it's definitely fermented. It is definitely fermented,
but the gluten is gone.
I've heard Carol say it's not fermented.
Oh, yeah, God, it seems like fermented food. I am familiar with fermented food, and this seems
and it no longer
well,
contains...
Okay, Philly. Good. I was going to say that,
but
Bert.
It's accepted, though,
it has no gluten. The gluten disappears.
Yes.
Wow.
Because Ion fucks with it. Ion does something to it. Now, we also have magnesium, the best magnesium in the world.
Well, magnesium's important.
Right, but Carolyn's is cellular. It's a pico size, so it goes into the cell. Everybody else's magnesium creates laxatives and diarrhea and that. Ours doesn't.
See, I needed that. I've just broken my elbow, and I've been taking Meg, Phos, D, C, K, and folic acid. Got calcium because I'm getting calcium from my diet. And that was exactly the thing. It's like, ease yourself on. Now, it's a good thing I can eat a cinder block. I have a rock-solid stomach, but I know that's the main concern for magnesium.
Well, so that's why we're calling you. You just hurt yourself. You're going to get Count's Remag, and that'll heal everything beyond your wildest dreams.
So, and I'm right as rain again. I'm back. But yeah, I would have loved that when I did it back in May.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. This will fix you beyond whatever damage. This thing regrows everything. And Carolyn, you know, she's the magnesium queen. She got all these books about it.
Okay, magnesium.
Yeah.
You know what? My physiotherapist is definitely on the same wavelength. He's all about the magnesium, too.
What's his name?
His name is Neil Luders.
No, I don't remember that name.
Yeah, no, he's doing all the readings.
So we have Relight, which is 12.
Of you guys. He had all sorts of photocopied stuff, and he said, wait, this one's more recent. Let me get you the most recent information, and it reminded me of both you, Bob.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, so we'll see if he knows about Carolyn's product. I mean, I don't think he does.
He'll
be giving it to you, but there's also Relight, which is 12 minerals, and they're all pico, so they go in the cell. Nothing else goes in the cell. Carolyn doesn't support vitamins in those normal supplements. We call
I don't
our product
on a regular basis.
What's that?
I don't take supplements, those kinds of supplements on a regular basis, only because I was, you know, I had this injury. I've actually weaned myself off already.
Right.
Are they available worldwide, or are they special order? Is that how you get them?
Yeah, you have to order them. You can't get them in the store. But you would, if you were on the computer now, you could go to RNAReset.com and look at the picture of the iCell. We actually have a photo that Ion gave us of the iCell.
We will absolutely do that. I'm not, but I will do that.
Right. So it just goes on. I would rather just let's see, who else wants to speak? Or Bert's pretty good. Tell him a bit about, see, Bert is a former football player. Bert, what were you?
Football player.
Yeah. You know, semi-pro, broke his body to pieces, you know, 20 years ago. Very bad being an athlete, he says, professional. And then with our products, has rebuilt himself that he doesn't even have to lift weights, and he looks fucking powerful.
Wow.
Doesn't even have
to
exercise.
It's hard to believe, but it's true.
Say a bit about that.
It's hard to believe, but it's true, but these products correct every imbalance that you have in your body, and you won't need any other supplements at all if you take these products.
And you can eat anything you want, Philly.
Yes. You can look at it as rewiring.
I live on ice cream, Philly. I live on ice cream. They got great ice cream here.
And you're 172, so it must work.
No, I'm 93, Philly.
Up, Gino.
Don't start fucking lying. I'm 93. I'm proud of it. That sounded familiar, eh, people? She knows, Bob, right? You're 172.
Oh, goodness.
So we were,
yeah,
what we do.
Yeah, where's Philly been this whole time? We need to get her on the show more.
Yeah. Here's what we do, Philly. We get talking about something. And then we say, I bet you we talked about this back in 1988. So I'll pick a Mike and Bob show at random, And often I just pick a show and go in the middle. We fucking bingo. Hit the topics right there. You wouldn't believe it.
Oh, my God.
It's unbelievable what we do. Right,
that's
people?
Fantastic.
Yeah, that's why I'm here,
yes.
Because it's freaking mind-blowing. Whatever the hell is going on here.
I love
trip.
The fact that you're still using the archives.
Yes, we're making Mike. Mike is famous, Philly. I keep telling this about once every 3 years, but he didn't give a fuck. But he is famous. You know, everybody knows about Mike. Well,
that's funny.
Here's what. Now, you could explain this, Philly. We just played the first interview that we did on June 17, 1987, where I come on and say I was here before the universe and after. That the word that you referred to. Yeah, before that and after it. And then I talked about the word mentioned in the beginning was the word when I said, well, I'm the word. I'm that Logos. So I'm making these amazing statements. And everybody listening is saying, this doesn't faze Mike at all. Mike goes along with it. What's going on? What's this Mike guy? I said, well, he didn't believe any of it, but he pretends to believe
Mike's
it.
Mike's the best straight man in the world.
Yes, yeah.
Right? Yeah, just keep coming. Yep.
The best straight man. And, hey, did he ever do the marathon again or just that one time?
He ran New York and Chicago, but... and some smaller local races, but then he came up with a foot thing that kind of evaded diagnosis for a while.
Yeah.
And it pulled him out for 2 years, and as people often do as they get older, he switched from running and now he's more active cycling.
Bicycling. Yeah, well, when he takes his product, it'll fix up whatever the missing thing was.
I think his foot is feeling much better, but, you know, once you hit your 50s, the rest of your body doesn't necessarily appreciate the marathon run as much anymore.
So Philly, what is it about Mike if he does this sort of friendly deadpan thing? Well, if he figured out did his mother do this to him? Where did he get this ability?
I would say that was... definitely more. No, I think he came out like that.
Yeah.
But if anyone kind of encouraged and supported it would have been his dad, who had a very dry sense of humor as well, and quite cultured and erudite, so knew things, but also knew how to be, you know, quiet and quietly cheeky.
Right. So Mike was used to this.
He's still with us. Like, I have to stop talking about him in the past tense.
Right. Somebody died connected to you, I saw on the Facebook 2 or 3 years ago. Was it the mother?
Yeah, Mike's mom.
Yeah, right. He has this, so he's used to some humorous commentary going on around him that as a kid he had to react to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that there you have it, people. That explains it.
That's Mike. Yeah, so I am going to go online and I'm going to look up what it is.
Yeah, RNA reset.
Because I do remember way back when Carolyn was offering the Chinese herbal homeopathic injections into acupuncture points.
Mir, yes.
I can't remember
Mir.
What... thank you. Yes,
yeah,
and I remember finding those quite successful.
Right. Now, you would go to rnareset.com, and the first product you'll see is RNA drops. So you scroll down the little blurb about it, and at the bottom it says, of that little blurb, of item number one, it says, click here. You click on that, and you'll see three pictures of this magical eye cell.
Okay.
So while you're doing that, we should talk to Mike.
Okay, hold on just one second. I'm going to give him a little poke.
are you guys in bed? Or maybe she's not hearing that.
What was that? He wants to know if he can talk to you later. He was out screening another film last night and got home very late.
Oh, he's sleeping.
He's not his usual bright self.
Well, we can call back in maybe 3 hours.
That'd be perfect.
Okay. All right, we're going to call.
Be perfect. We're around today.
All right, we're going to call him back and continue this interview. All right,
and
thanks a lot, Philly.
You're very welcome, Bob. This is just for you, and the rest of the listeners may not get it, but I'm going to tell you just for you. Cleo.
Yes?
Your
daughter?
Yes, our daughter. told us a couple of weeks ago that she wants to get her first ever tattoo, and it's a James Joyce reference.
Wow.
That's for you.
Yes,
you call
yes.
us back in a few hours.
Okay, thanks a lot. Okay, Philly,
okay,
talk to you
bye,
soon.
Bye, Bob.
Bye. Now, wasn't that nice? So how do I get out of this? I guess I'll flash.
That was super nice.
Yeah. Now, Philly, she was a DJ, too. Now, how do we... I don't want to be... Well, we're not. She hung up. So I guess we're disconnected. Then if they hear it, it's okay, right? So we're disconnected. I don't have to hit the flash, do I? Do I disconnect? What do you think? Are you guys hearing me?
I don't know.
What?
Might be safe to do it. Might be safe just to do it anyway.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to do it. If I have to, I might have to call back. Okay, so I went off. It went did. So that means I could have called someone else. Now I'm back here, so I think it's disconnected. So, yeah, Philly.
Do you hear anybody, Bert?
She never worked. What'd you say?
What's that?
I think he dropped off.
I'm here.
I think so. Do you hear anything, Bert? I think Bob's
yes,
gone.
I hear Bob.
Bob is not here. Yeah, made you laugh, see? You fucking give it up. I fooled you. Bob's not here.
We just laugh all the time.
You can talk with Bob now. He'll never know. He's not going to listen to the archives. Talk about him. Talk about him. Say what you really like to say to him. Okay, so listen to this. So Philly, like she said, it's the first time she's had a regular job. Now, she was probably born around 61, so she's in her 50s. And so lately, last 3 or 4 years, she's got this government job. Before that, she started off as a kid, you know, in college DJing at CKLN and kept DJing. And she went on to CBC and had a national radio show for years. And then somehow they decided to cut it off, to stop it. So that was a big trauma because she had no other job experience or nothing. And the DJ didn't keep going, so she had to invent herself all over again. So I remember Mike telling me a couple years ago she did find this gig that was surprisingly satisfying. But so she could appreciate the fact that I fucking can do 18-hour radio shows. I mean, you heard her be shocked at that because she was a DJ herself. And she'd also be shocked that people think I'm the greatest DJ in the world because I didn't do DJ at CKLN. I was a nerd. I was a part of the spoken word programming. So that's what's neat. And, you know, that's the way it is with Michael. Mike ain't going to get on the phone. He's going to fucking sleep in. You know what I mean?
Well, he was
not
going to budge. Come on.
No, and I know, but the thing is that...
Well, just have Philly on again.
Bob's calling. Fucking Bob's calling. Right. You get up. You fucking answer the phone. But not Mike. He's still indifferent.
Yeah, that's what I thought, Bob, because I mean, it's not like Bob calls you every week or every month. I mean, when was the last time you called him?
Right. maybe 4 years ago.
Yeah, see?
Yeah.
He should have got on.
Yeah. Four fucking years.
He's a cucumber.
Al, you looking at him? Where do you see that?
He's cool. He's cool as a cucumber.
Right.
He's not fazed.
Where? I'm looking at the Facebook. Where do you see his pictures, like on his Facebook page?
I don't see him. I'm just the fact that he didn't get up. Makes him cool.
Oh, I thought you were saying he looked...
No, I'm looking him up now, though.
Yeah, me too. I'm looking him up.
Like...
He's got a picture of himself on the beach in the distance.
On the beach. Okay, because there's a shitload of Mike Dyers.
Now, you know, I'm looking at his page, okay? Now, do I influence this? It's got Greg, you know where you look at pictures of friends? It's got a picture of Greg Duffel, who took over the International Connection after I finished it. It has a picture of Matt Shepard, who runs my 5body.com site. So two main guys. It has another guy, Hal Nedzicki, who interviewed me for a Canadian magazine. It has Bob Wiseman, who was a musician, Blue Rodeo, famous Canadian band. He was a patient of Carol. So you get this whole Dobbstown thing happening on Mike's site. Now, would I evoke those pictures?
No, that's the Facebook algorithm. It knows your connections, so it'll do that. If you look up another friend, it'll show you related friends.
All right. Yeah, so it knows. And so I'm looking for, if I click photos, does...
Although there could
be
both.
You won't be allowed.
At play there. Yeah, there's too many Mike Tires. I can't find him.
Oh, no, it's Owen Sound. Mike Dyer, Owen Sound, or put Ontario.
Okay, maybe I'll put
that. I'm actually looking at his photos. There's all these old photos way back. I don't know if you have to be a friend to see them, but he's got a lot of photos, his whole life on the photo thing. But, do you see that? Owen Sound? And oh, that's spelled M-Y-K-E.
I have a little
piece. M-Y.
Oh, M-Y-K-E.
Not
M-I.
M-
oh.
Yeah. That'll bring it up right away. He's actually not becoming famous. Nobody's listening to this show, right? But we could pretend that. It sounds like he's becoming famous because we got people from all over the world.
Oh, there's the Fabulous Festival of Fringe Film.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And so if you click on photos, does it show you any?
Yeah,
so you can see his blonde kid, blonde son, a picture of when he was young playing the guitar. He's the no
Isn't
hair,
like
almost
Nick
no
Cave,
hair.
Nick Cave, kind of?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nick Cave and maybe some British musician. He's the guy with the very short hair.
Yeah, I got it. Cool.
So, what do we do next? Let's see if...
talk about me?
Yeah, we can talk about you, but I'm just checking in on Ben and Sarah. Did you want to say anything? Have they gone to bed? Probably sleeping. So, what do I do, Bert?
I don't have...
we got to read Alan Cabal.
Oh, yeah, let's do it. Froxy's not here. Let's do it.
Yeah. Did you say something, Sarah? Did Sarah come in? All right. Now, Alan does another fine column. It's called The Great American Delusion. Subtitle, Americans Are a Simple-Minded People. So he continues to be outraged and pissed off. Let's see who's here. Everybody here?
Present.
Yeah, I think Bert's gone. Let's see, usually... leaves me a message. Let's see if he's saying goodbye. No, he didn't. So Bert's gone. Here's the other problem. I hope so. Oh, okay. Well, where would you be? Oh, you're in Anonymous. You're Anonymous. Okay. All right, so let's do this Great American Dream.
Did we do Revolution's message?
No. The latest one, The Great American Delusion.
Okay.
Dated July 17th. Now, he, if you notice, he's always trying to explain the American character, the American stupidity, American archetype. So, and he never brings in McLuhan Media stuff, so he misses a few points. Okay, so here's what he says. Are you ready, Eliza?
That was Eliza?
Yes. That was me.
Okay.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Do I usually... Yes. Do I usually mute you guys when I read it?
You do, yeah.
Okay, just so we don't get any surprising big crashes. Mute you. Oh, wait a minute. Look at this. Roselle, New Jersey, 908-445. You're a new name. You want to say who you are? Want to speak? New number, 908-445. Don't want to speak? Okay, so I will mute everybody.
All participants are now muted.
Okay, so he says, watching Americans grapple with moral complexity is like watching a monkey trying to figure out a Rubik's Cube. Americans are a simple-minded people, disinclined toward the study of history or philosophy, imbued with a fiercely puritanical distrust of leisure and the opportunity for self-reflection. Americans prefer their moral choices presented in stark black and white, good versus evil, with no nuance. Americans see themselves as the divine nation, Zion, that is and was the philosophical core of manifest destiny, the inherently psychopathic delusion of American exceptionalism. America is not a nation. A nation is defined as a geographic region inhabited by a people sharing a common heritage. That definition ceased to apply here as soon as the first European colonials arrived, like swarms of orcs from the east. I looked up orc, that's the ugly creatures in Lord of the Rings kind of stuff, kind of literature. The history of the Western Hemisphere is like Lord of the Rings gone wrong. That's true. The printing press made Americans go out to be alone. No other culture does that. So it turned everything upside down, made Western Hemisphere weird. Then he says, Alan Cabal says, in a mere 200-odd years, the USA transitioned from a small group of disparate colonies warily united against a foreign despot. Despite a great deal of mutual antipathy, it transitioned to the most well-armed and bloodthirsty empire the world has ever known. Our civil war served as the crucible, the baptism of fratricidal bloodshed that would endow us with a mutual covenant to proceed west on a campaign of genocide unlike anything the world has seen before or since. Our completely unnecessary entry into the European internecine conflict known as World War I resulted in the evisceration of Europe and the Ottoman Empire, resulting in the horrific bloodbath of World War II, the 40-year-old Cold War against the USSR, and the ongoing disaster in the Middle East. Ask typical Americans about any of these events, and you'll get a dumbfounded look if you're lucky. If you're not lucky, you'll get your nose broken. Americans can rattle off arcane details of sporting events long past, or which current celebrity, or details about which current celebrity is in rehab. But most of them are completely unaware of the fact that Iran hasn't initiated a war of aggression in over 200 years, or that one-third of the Palestinian population is Christian. Most of these morons think that Russia annexed or seized Crimea. That's in quotes, annexed or seized Crimea. Blithely unaware of the national referendum in which Crimeans voted nearly unanimously to rejoin with Mother Russia. They think the charge of the Light Brigade was a sale on CFL bulbs at Home Depot, if they think of it at all. Some of them read books, fiction mostly bad fiction, sometimes great fiction, under the duress of a high school assignment. Most Americans of a certain age are familiar with the greatest one-hit wonder in American literature, Harper Lee. Her To Kill a Mockingbird is the very definition of, quote, beloved masterpiece, unquote. Like most people with an IQ above room temperature, I have my suspicions regarding the release of her earlier rendition of the story titled Go Set a Watchman. Had she wanted it published, she most certainly would have released it before now. As things stand, America has its knickers in a twist not over the exploitation of a dying woman who is clearly non compos mentis by her guardian, but over the presentation of a classic American icon of justice, Atticus Finch, and as an unrepentant and open racist. So I guess he's a character in this book. And he's saying he's a presentation of a classic American icon of justice as an unrepentant and open racist. Americans cannot comprehend how a man could at once be devoted to justice and harbor racist beliefs. They don't grasp the difference between active and passive bigotry. They don't know or care to know that Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia, that's Dr. Beter's old state, former Klansman, that's Robert Byrd, was the only man in the Senate with the guts to stand up to the tyrant, George W. Bush, when it really counted, when W. was at the peak of his cornpone Caligula impersonation. Americans think that Vlad Putin is a bully, bully in quotes, because he thwarted our ambition to topple the secular government of Syria on our crusade to Tehran. Because he busted a pack, another thing he did, Putin busted a pack of George Soros-backed mercenary sluts for desecrating a cathedral. Remember them, those three singers, punk band? So they think he's a bully because he busted a pack of George Soros-backed or funded mercenary sluts for desecrating a cathedral. And because Putin refuses to surrender the ancient Russian nation to the cultural imperialism of the morally flexible, not inflexible, morally flexible multicultural American empire. They think that single mothers on welfare and food stamps struggling to survive and feed their kids are deadbeats, but think of nothing of subsidizing multi-million dollar stadiums for the bloated and completely unnecessary National Football League, a non-profit corporation which pays no taxes and provides steroid-laden wife beaters, animal abusers, and rapists with extravagant salaries for inflicting concussions on one another in public. When I think of the incredible hubris of this country and its anencephalic and heartless citizenry, I think of the Greek goddess Nemesis and an old Elvis Costello lyric, quote, "She's filing her nails while they're dragging the lake," unquote. That's this week's sermon from Alan Cabal. Any dissenters to that opinion? Did he get it 100% right? I'll unmute everybody.
All participants are now unmuted.
Parts of the opinion I think I get from Alan Cabal, I think this is what I like about him, is that he does do visual, nonverbal gesture in his writing. There's this thing with a turn of phrase. Well, how to articulate this? It's just, there are, sometimes people make sentences that I feel them in my head or in my body, like it's an arc, a swoop, and sometimes a little curly cue, and then so one thing he does is like bursts of, like a bunch of images that are similar, and then he'll shift gears right away and do another burst of different kinds of images. To me, that's kind of gestural. All of that
right.
Stuff I just said.
Yeah, it's iconic. It's collage.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. And so his bitterness doesn't bother you?
No, because he's so clever.
Right.
And
he knows timely references.
Takes me places. He's got nice timing, and I don't know. It's just, his writing is a fun ride.
He's got hip references. He's up on the latest newsy controversy. So he's informed, but he's living in a...
But you know what? I'm nowhere near as
informed
as he is, and it's like the timing gets me more than the specific references. There's something else, because
right.
I don't even know what a lot of his references are, but I like the way it feels.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah, and
so that would be gestural, right?
That would be what?
Is that nonverbal gesture then in writing? Because earlier
yes.
you were saying.
Yeah, it's iconic.
Yeah, okay.
He's playing with iconic imagery, you know, major brand cliche, controversial aspects. I mean, to call Americans
orcas. Yeah, I just wanted
orcas,
to know if I understood that concept. I think I do.
No, you got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a stoner, so he's actually maybe a tactile perceiver. He's not verbal, visual.
Yeah.
He's got some other stone vibe going on. Mainly because he's not politically correct. He's not spiritually correct. He's not health correct, though he sometimes appears that, throws something about that common sense in.
Well, that's like the tickle, where you almost expect something correct and then you don't get it, and you realize you actually expected that.
He actually what?
You almost expect him
words.
To say the correct thing, but then when he doesn't, you're actually not surprised, but it's gratifying.
Right. Right. What was that one?
Did
he what?
Did he study McLuhan? Because this pattern, he did some interesting patterns in this particular
article. Well,
that's
how I first met him. I read an article by him in the late 90s, and he said Marshall McLuhan was the Andy Warhol of big science, which is
okay,
a very
right, yes.
good statement.
Yeah,
yes.
that's a cool
and,
statement.
That's
I haven't
why
heard him say
I
that.
Him out and met him. What'd you say? You heard that before?
No, I haven't heard that before. I like that statement. That's neat.
Right, and he did quote McLuhan a couple of columns ago. So he's read some McLuhan. He knows the basic stuff.
Yeah.
You see, he's in Corbin and Lovejob's world. He's an Aleister Crowleyite. And he actually edited one of the major tomes that came out of that world. The Necronomicon?
Necronomicon.
He made that. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
The Crowley bookstore in downtown New York City, I used to go to it. He was there in the 70s, part of the cult there, and they made the book. So he's got that, but he also was a child actor. He's a monstrous, you know, sex fiend, part of the underground S&M world or some way. And then he also has culture because he's a writer. But he also has fringe culture, so he knows the conspiracy stuff, but he knows McLuhan. So he's actually quite well-read, or quite, he's like a writer. He knows a lot about a lot of different things.
Well, see, and that's interesting because of what was being said earlier about how some folks dismiss, oh, well, he's not in your audience. And
no,
I was thinking about the loser welfare thing, and it's like that guy is a neat example of that, because in one sense he's total loser welfare dude, and in another sense he's not.
He's in the bunker. He puts himself in the bunker because he morally can't relate to American society. It's not ethically smart to help to encourage this monster. It's his position.
That's because he's more interested in being right than happy.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah, he's more interested in being right than happy. And, you know, he's sick. He's 61 or something. He says, I'm limp. I'm a cripple. I've got these herpes or something. He presents himself as old and aging. He's almost proud of it.
He's world weary.
Yes, very world-weary, and he's going to make that into a art form in his writing.
He is doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's there's another point there.
Not only his writing, that's his life is that art form.
Yeah. And he, I send him, you know, I haven't sent the last couple weeks, but he's pretty well gotten every show we've discussed him over the last few months, and he's never responded. I don't know if he's clicking on it or hearing it. sometimes the ideas seem to reflect us. A little thing here and there, but we'll send him some more, and he'll probably ignore it. If he's a megalomaniac.
No, it would be cool to have him on. If he, I wish he could.
Yeah, we should invite, that's right, we should do a formal invitation. He interviewed me, I'm going to interview
him.
Yeah. So, Eliza, you found out the email that you tried to get him. Where is that at the site? Maybe you could find that, Eliza, and send to me. I mean, is it the manager, the editor or something?
Yeah, there were like four or five other people, which I emailed.
Right.
None of them responded because I was asking for Alan Cabal's email address. So maybe they know that Alan Cabal doesn't, you know, talk to people.
Give it out.
Via email, yeah.
So send me those emails and I'll send a formal request to interview.
All right, that sounds like a plan.
Yeah, because Bob isn't people, so it'll work better.
It's a better chance, but also I'm a competitor. He's a megalomaniac. I can be perceived as a megalomaniac. He could see that I'm setting him up. You know, he'll keep a healthy distance. Like Norman Mailer was careful when he encountered Gore Vidal. It can be that level. I don't know if he has that, but
yeah,
could be.
Let's find out.
Yeah. So to save me time, Eliza can go and get those emails, send them to me, and I'll make a formal letter to him.
Sure, I'll forward
them. I hope
he
comes on.
Okay, so we did that. We did that.
Do you want to read the commentary? There's actually a lot.
Oh, is there some? Oh, okay. Let's see this. Yeah, because Americans are big, right? They can comment on vast generalisms about themselves. So Richard Aubrey says there needs to be another category of word beyond adjective, noun, and so forth. It would be exponentialer or something. And we would put it before, quote, arrogant, superior, know-it-all, who has nothing to go on, unquote, when describing the author of this piece. So he's an exponentialer, this person's suggesting. Now, I get this. He gets the same accusation as I get. I'm an arrogant, superior, know-it-all, who has nothing to go on. So that's there's a similarity between Alan and I. So then Kriemke writes, I'll assume this is a rant, and Cabal isn't trying to be ridiculous or humorous here. He assumes that those with the loudest voices and smallest intellects represent all Americans. His stand with Putin on Syria and Crimea is interesting. Though I agree with him on several points, he takes on the, quote, simple-minded American, unquote, persona as he rants against it. So Alan is a simple-minded American, he's saying. I'm not sure what Cabal was trying to achieve, perhaps to embarrass himself? He succeeded that. Yes, there is a simple-minded level to Cabal. It's easy to be mad the way he's mad, is what I would say. But he writes very well. So somebody, William Brick, Wimbrick writes, having followed Cabal's journalism for, yeah, I recognize that name, Brick. Having followed Cabal's journalism for some two decades, we think he's a free man expressing his sincere beliefs in a world of publicists who, to paraphrase Lady Astor, would rather suck up than be blown up. He has guts, in other words, the quality that free speech is meant to express. The notion of the simple-minded American is not inaccurate. Our system of education fails to encourage true critical thinking and moral independence. When a friend was asked whether he had seen the last presidential election debate, he replied, quote, I'm a lawyer. I bill my clients $400 an hour to lie to me. Why should I let those guys do it to me for free? So he doesn't want to listen to politicians because they're liars. He will only listen to liars if they pay him to listen. Alan is right on so many points. There is no need for us to enter World War I, brackets, unless bailing out the bankers who had lent money to the Allies counts. Two, the consequent destruction of the Central European and Ottoman empires destabilized Europe. So I guess he's right on that. And his comments on Iran, the Crimea, and the Palestinian Christians are founded on fact. His observations on, quote, Go Set a Watchman, the original title for, I guess, To Kill a Mockingbird, express the suspicions of many intelligent people. Although, as my household works its way through the book, we're surprised at its power and beauty. We, too, admired Robert Byrd and have never felt that a terrible error in youth was unforgivable. Last and not least, his take on organized sports, Cabal's take on organized sports, that parasitic drain on millions of taxpayers in cities across the nation, also is right on point. Why not argue with his facts, if one can, rather than indulge in ad hominem attacks and expressions of mere personal taste? Boy, there's even more. So Russ, that could be Russ Smith, the guy who owns this thing known as Mugger, because I recognize that William Brick. He might be a guy who wrote for Russ. So Russ says, great to hear from you, Bill, and thanks for the comment. Just a couple of observations of my own. It's said Korea is the forgotten war, but World War One is barely touched upon in schools today, as my kids confirm. Yeah, it sounds like Russ Smith. Also, it shouldn't be forgotten that Wilson, Woodrow Wilson, who campaigned in 1916 on not entering the European conflict, not only reneged on that promise, but then suspended the First Amendment, jailing some 10,000 Americans for expressing both verbally and in print their opposition. On the matter of public financing of sports facilities, I'm in almost complete agreement. It's not right to dun citizens, whether they like sports or not, for a project that wealthy owners can afford. The new Yankee Stadium is a good example, as is the new park currently being built in Atlanta. And going back a few decades, Baltimore's admittedly splendid Camden Yards, which abuts the Inner Harbor. And he lives in Baltimore, so he would know about the Inner Harbor. So more proof, this is Russ Smith, the founder of this website. One exception, I'd say, is the Washington Nationals' new stadium, which was built in an impoverished neighborhood and has provided jobs and retail opportunities. So that wasn't a waste. Cabal responds to William Brick. So obviously Brick is part of the old writers for this world. Cabal says, I am honored by your praise, Bill. Thank you. So, see, they have this mutual respect, Alan, Bill, and Russ Smith. They're all former writers of the New York Free Press. Richard Aubrey, did we already hear from him?
Yeah, he
started off calling Cabal arrogant. So he responds, the Allies all figured the U.S. was late. In fact, according to Marshall's memoirs of his service, the German resistance was fading by the time the U.S. got its troops up, mostly in 1918. There were, as he said, Soviets in the German army talking to each other by radio. Anyway, to put the end of the sick man of Europe against the U.S. is idiocy. See Anderson's Lawrence in Arabia. Wilson is considered a crypto-fascist in conservative circles, but to blame him for U.S. entrance into the war is silly. Circumstances change. FDR also said something of that sort. To call the whole complex of Cabal's examples a matter of simple-mindedness is also really, really nuts. To call the whole complex of Cabal's examples a matter of simple-mindedness is also really, really nuts. So, he's sort of complexly what he's, I don't know if I get all that he's saying.
Well, the last sentence, he's commenting in reference to what Kremlinki said about how he himself,
right.
Alan Cabal himself, is simple-minded. So that was
in reference to
his comment.
Oh. I don't get this. The Allies all figured the U.S. was late. In fact, according to Marshall's memoirs, the German resistance was fading by the time the U.S. got its troops up, mostly 1918. Now, what's this? There were, as he said, Soviets in the German army talking to each other by radio. Well, what's that talking about? Why were there Soviets in the German army?
Spies?
Yeah, maybe spies. I don't know what point that addresses. Anyway, to put the end of the sick man of Europe against the U.S. is idiocy. Well, what's that mean? Did Cabal compare the United States with Europe? We don't know, right? And then you're supposed to look at Lawrence in Arabia. Wilson is considered a crypto-fascist in conservative circles. Sounds like the writer is a conservative. But to blame him for U.S. entrance into the war is silly. Circumstances change. Well, yeah, we see that. So somebody called Subek writes in, totally agree that sports owners extort money from city residents, so the billionaire ends up getting the subsidy. The U.S. has become a paradise for billionaires. One thing I would add, though, is that even though the NFL front office is some sort of S corporation that makes it tax-free, all the money is in the franchises, which pay taxes. I don't think the front office generates any revenue. Anything you'll say about that, Bert, in the athlete world?
That makes sense, because the head office just main controller, but definitely they get feed-offs, but they probably don't pay taxes. That was alarming to see that, but it makes sense.
You didn't know that till now?
No, it did not at all, but it makes a lot of sense. They're like the governing body.
The franchises do.
Yes. They would have to, because
so
they're...
So what's a franchise?
That's like each
that
city.
That would be the teams?
The teams. The franchise in each city, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so then Subak says to I guess the guy who disagreed with Alan all the way along, Richard Arbery, and then says that to call Cabal simple-minded is nuts. This Subak says, so you are agreeing with Alan since you say calling his example simple-minded is really nuts. So here's this guy who disagrees with Alan, and Subek's pointing out, well, you actually are agreeing with a big aspect of him. So that's it. You happy with that, Madeline? We've done it. We ran through the commentary. Everybody happy with that one?
Yay.
You know, I used to read Russ Smith. We should go over and see what he says. Often it's pretty local. May not have any interest, but I want to go over and see if any other Alan Cabal stuff had any commentary. So, a revolution is messy. No comments. Extreme Responses, that's another title. It is a response. We did this, I think we did this, Kanye West. I don't know if we did this, but Kanye West's voice is like a barnyard animal. No, he questions this. Kanye West's voice is like a barnyard animal's? Give me a break. Complete lack of talent, total BS. Also, a total delusion that only black America wants the Confederate flag taken down. What are you smoking, Alan? That sounds familiar. So we did these, didn't we?
Yes.
Yeah, we did them.
Yeah, okay. So there's no new letters. So I'm going to go over and see if Russ Smith does something interesting. I mean, he often does stuff about his children going to comic book stores, in New York to buy comics. My college buddy's a Ted Cruz supporter. You want to read that? Or did we do that? No, doesn't look familiar. So, Russ Smith is a Reaganite, a Reagan Republican. He was a a counterculture guy in the 70s, but he said he saw the light and agreed with Reagan. So he doesn't like Clinton or any of these Democrats. He's always critiquing the Democratic cliches. So, but I don't know what he would think of these extreme right-wing Republicans. I think he doesn't support them.